The farmer should be the first to receive a share of crops. Reflect in what I am saying, for the Lord will give you insight into all of this. Thank you, Lord, for his word.
Thank you, Gwen. Thank you for members of the band leading us this morning. Our other pastor, David Lockwood, is at Sydney preaching today, so we remember him there. Can I also ask you to pray for their latest child, just turned 1 year old, Alana. She spent most of Thursday in the A&E up at the hospital. And I think what's happened is that this terrible bug that's gone round, which has affected so many, well, actually started to affect her breathing. And I gather she's been given some help to do that. But nevertheless, it'd be good for us to remember that family in our prayers. But the other two girls were here this morning, so that's an encouragement. The reading that we had gave us an indication of something that was on Paul's heart. And I always feel that when we read the second letter to Timothy, we should never lose sight that this was the last letter that he wrote that we have in our New Testament. And just bear in mind that he was in house arrest in Rome, and more than likely just before he was about to be executed. Now, the reason I say that to you is because if you knew that you were going to depart, you have a wonderful way of getting everything in your mind focused. And if you were going to share some things, would you not think that they would be the important things that you would want to get across? You know, when you're not well and you think, I wonder if this is going to take me. And you begin to think, well, what do I say? What do I say? What do? How do I put it all together? Now, I tell you that because it just seems to me that there was so much that the Apostle Paul could have shared, but the second letter to Timothy sharpens for us what he felt was important, not only to say to his apprentice, but also to the wider church. And that's what we're looking at. So please, if you could look at these words that we're going to be looking at over the weeks and see them as some of the last things that Paul wanted to share. It just sort of sharpens it all up. And in this particular reading, he refers to three people who engage in different areas of life. And if you were able to follow it, you would easily remember the three: the soldier, the athlete, and the farmer. Thinking this week about these three and thinking perhaps of a relevant comment to make, I don't know if you read in the Reader's Digest that there was a challenge given to people to describe their jobs in one sentence. I don't know whether this was a reissue, it had been done before, perhaps some of you read it before. I found it fascinating. A pilot said this: I spend most of the day looking out of the window. A professor at a university said this: I talk in other people's sleep. Couldn't help thinking that might well be applied to the parts of the preacher. The photographer said, I shoot couples on their wedding day. A computer technician at a local college said, I provide therapy for abused laptops. But perhaps my favourite, and my apologies to those of you who are this, I mean you no disrespect, this is the consultant. He says, I show up when nobody called me, I get paid for things they don't want to know, and I answer the questions they are not asking. Well, if you are a consultant, I'm sure that isn't you, but I have met some. But we're looking today not at those kind of folk, but we're looking at a soldier, an athlete, and a farmer. And if there's one word that actually sums up what Paul was seeking to do when he was using these as illustrations, it would be focus. Focus. How to keep focus in the distractions that we all have. But in what? In our Christian walk, that's what he's really saying. So let's just look at these, and let's just think for a few moments if we were to try and describe a soldier and to pick up what the Apostle Paul honed in on about a soldier, verses 3-4. And the first thing that we noticed, he said, was that the soldier avoids worldly entanglements obeying his commanding or her commanding officer. I guess we're all able to be distracted. I guess we're all able to come to a place, perhaps here on a Sunday, and think very much about what we're going to hear. And then almost immediately that I start, it floods into your head, did I turn the oven on? It's not a small leap from that position to then begin to think about the thing you're doing tomorrow. And then before you know where you are, actually your whole mind is taken up probably with most things that you're doing this week. And I believe the Apostle Paul was saying that as far as a soldier is concerned, because of where they are placed, they don't have the luxury of being too distracted lest they miss what the commanding officer is trying to say. So let me picture this scene for a moment for you. The squad are moving out and they know that they're in territory that could well draw enemy fire. They know that they have to be alert, they know that they have to be aware. At which point the commanding officer, aware that something is coming through, maybe a missile or something like that, shouts to his men, down! Now, I just want you to pause for a moment and think about the implications of any one of that squad going, what did he say? I've had enough of him. This is the last time to do anything he says. And actually, you know the consequences of that. Actually, what we've also failed to realise is that this particular commanding officer did have the well-being of his men and women, the people there. There was no question that he was going, let's have a bit of fun with these guys. No, this was serious stuff. Down, guys, your life depends upon it. And I just can't help feeling that the Apostle Paul is saying there comes a point in our Christian lives where we just need to ask ourselves, what distracts me from really listening to what God is saying to me, and what distracts me from fulfilling the calling and the role that he has called me to. You see, I can remember the days that most of the advertisements for joining the services all went along the same way. Join the services and you will get a good career. Learn a trade. So many encouragements to actually, this is the best place that you can better yourself. Only to discover, to most people's surprise, that suddenly the news comes along and we're in a Falklands War. That came as a big shock to people. And then since then, if you're really honest, probably something in the region of every 10 to 20 years, there has been a major outbreak of hostilities. And so straight away, folks that perhaps had one view of what they were joining up for are found that they've joined up for something else. And it seems to me that we are in a similar position today. We've joined up, if we become Christians, for something really worthwhile. But, of course, we are also engaged in family life, we're engaged in work life, we're engaged in civilian life. But when things are different, when the heat is on, when there's a call for Christians to stand up and be counted, when there is a change of climate, perhaps the peace time is not so much there, then there's a call, as the Apostle Paul knew from his own time, but actually for now, Christians, listen to your commanding officer, be ready to serve, and be aware of the distractions. They are important, yes, but you need to be focused if you're going to accomplish what he wants you to do. I think the second thing that Paul would say in these verses is that anyone in the squad is reliant on the other members of the squad. And I think his picture of the soldier was not in isolation, but it was actually as part of a team. I think increasingly now that we talk about the individual in our society, the importance of the individual, the importance of what the individual can do and achieve. But the one thing about the Christian life is the dependability of Christians together, each playing their own part, each fulfilling the calling. But actually we need one another. It's the best description of koinonia, fellowship, that we'll ever have. We need one another to be effective in what God is calling us to do as a community, to change the surroundings in which we live, particularly in a time of hostility, for which in some ways that would be where Christianity sits now as compared with some while ago. The third thing, we come back to the commanding officer, says the Apostle Paul. And he says, do you trust your commanding officer? Do you trust your commanding officer? Well, I guess when life dishes out difficult things, when our faith is tested to the limit, sometimes it's perhaps easier to think that God has gone, or God is not there. And we set aside the Bible that might well give us inspiration for seeking to do all that we can do to make the best of where we are. The Apostle Paul would say, do you trust your commanding officer? Well, I'm sure there would have been some commanding officers that were a little bit self-seeking and self-centered, but I imagine many knew the responsibility of the welfare of their squad, or their company, battalion, or whatever. But in God, we have someone who makes a promise and sticks to it. It's not in his nature to do anything else. And he says, you are important to me. You are important to me. And even though you go through the valley of the shadow, I will be with you. And even though it seems that the circumstances of your life today seem as if I am departed, but I'm not. And actually, I do have your best interest at heart, even though the circumstances of your life don't do that. Because I and I alone have the capacity to weave some of these things in a way into a bigger picture that you could never see. We need to trust our commanding officer. The second picture is the picture of the athlete. The picture of the athlete. This week I happen to be in the school, the primary school, All Saints School in Sidley. And I was told that the theme for the this particular term or half term, I never know if it's a term or a half term really, but the truth is it was endurance. And I think, oh great. So I said, well, endurance can be linked to perseverance and so on and so forth. And I thought, what would actually help these children to try and get a bit of an understanding of it? And I showed them the clip of film by the gold medalist Eric Liddell. It was a long time ago, so it wasn't very contemporary. But if you've ever seen the film Chariots of Fire, you will know that Eric Liddell was not only a great runner, but he actually became a missionary in China. But the interesting thing was that in the qualifying times before he went to the Olympics, of course, like today, they have to win a number of races. And everyone knew that Eric Liddell was a good runner, but in those pre-heats where they were just time trialing and everything else, Eric Liddell sets off with a group of people. And everybody knew, in a way, that this guy was going to walk it, in one respect. But he gets to the first bend, and whether or not he was pushed, or whether he stumbled, but in the film, you see that he is really taken out of the group, he's fallen on the floor. Now, the level that they're operating at, what is he to do? What is he to do? And I said to the children, it's those moments when that happens in our life. Might not be running, it might be something that gets spoiled, it might be someone lets you down or whatever. It's at that moment that you can feel like giving up. But in the film, Eric Liddell kind of puts his head up and he looks and he sees where the group are. And he gets back on his feet. There's a lovely little part where the trainer, not of Eric Liddell, but another runner, says, get up, lad. It's a wonderfully moving point. And what happens is, he gets up and he gets back onto the track again, and he actually wins. I mean, you'd think that would be impossible, but he does. And he got a gold medal in 1924 at the Paris Olympics. He then went on to serve God as a missionary in China. This is what he said. God has made me fast. And when I run, I feel his pleasure. You know, I pondered those words time and time again. And it just struck me that what it is, it's God does something in a person, but somehow they need to translate what's in them into something which gives God pleasure. And then quick as a flash, I was reminded of the baptism of Jesus. And you can read it in the Gospels. It's that account where John the Baptist is baptizing people and Jesus comes along and he says to John Baptizer, well, he can't make head or tail of this. Because he's saying, no, we're doing a bit of baptizing because we've fallen short. Why do you need to be baptized? And Jesus said, no, but to fulfill all righteousness. With what I am going to do on the cross, I'm taking people's sin on the cross. So this is the start of the journey. Baptize me, and he does, and he comes out of the water. we are told that there was an audible voice that said, "You are my son whom I love," full stop. In fact, the later translations seem to make it all into one sentence and they miss the point. "You are my son whom I love," full stop. "With you I am well pleased." The importance of getting that right is not God saying, "Because you are doing this baptism, I love you." Get what I'm saying? "Because you are doing this baptism, I love you." No. "I love you," full stop. "But because you have taken this initiative, that pleases me." You and I, if we've received Jesus Christ into our lives, we have a new birth, and we are now his renewed, reborn children. And he says, "You are those whom I love," full stop. It's completely the gift and the grace of God. But how do we move on from that? It's, well, "I desire to please you, Lord." And how do I please you? And I'll tell you, it seems to me, where this words of Eric Little come in. We please God when we reach the potential or embrace the potential of what he's given to us and turn it back to him. We please him when we use what he's given us and express it as a calling, as an act of love, and so on. That may require us training. It might require us searching, discovering what it is that we're called to do. Or it may well be that, like the soldier, we're not doing because we're getting distracted with other things. The other thing that the apostle says is, when you run as an athlete, you keep the rules. Well, we know today that every great race is always checked afterwards to see how many extra stimulants that people have had. You know, the drug testing issue and so on and so forth. You have to keep the rules. My dear friends, we are called as athletes to keep the rules. But what does that mean as a Christian? Well, I think it means deciding whether we are going to do Christianity God's way or do Christianity our way. And if you think that sounds strange, I think it's ever so easy to decide in our minds what a Christian is and live like it, and that never changes. But when we are confronted with what the scriptures say and what God wants for us, then it comes down to, am I going to live that life his way, or am I going to decide what being a Christian is? And I remember early on thinking, I relate to this, I relate to that, but that's a bit tough. And he moved me out of my comfort zone, moved me out of it, because he had a plan. He had a plan that was part and parcel of what I thought. What is it that really you're being called to do? What is it that you could say, when I do this, that God has equipped me to do, I know his pleasure? What is it? It may well be that you're still to discover it. It may be that you know it, but there's a struggle to do it. I don't know. It may be that you just need to rethink what it is. Maybe when he says, "Are you relying on your strength or are you relying on my strength?" Are you a person that is willing to receive his spirit, his beautiful spirit, to empower us? Are you willing to ask for that renewal daily? Or have we put a ceiling on how much God is allowed in? Well, keeping the rules means that we trust him to give us that which he knows is good, to empower us by his Spirit, and to walk in those ways, and then fulfill our potential. Again, it's about focus. But just like, for your encouragement, the athletes of Paul's day, there was this wonderful, particularly the Corinthian Games, they had this enormous table. Do you know, you can go to Corinth today and still see the stone remains of this table. It was called the Bema. And it was where the trophies were available, the laurels, everything else, for all the people that had run their races and they had done well. No wonder that the Apostle Paul says in 2 Corinthians 5, thinking of that presentation table called the Bema, he says, we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ so that each of us may receive what is due for us, what we have done when we have been here working through our lives. The third picture is the picture of the farmer. The farmer. And that's a very interesting one, because you can imagine the picture of the athlete, but the farmer, he's operating at a totally different level. He's not doing a 100-yard sprint and then the photographer comes out and snaps. No, he's sowing and he's working the land, and he is hoping and praying that there will be sufficient rain. And the one thing with the farmer is he's not an instant person. He's a patient person. And I just want to say that most of us who live today with the technology that we have, it's all instant. Instant this, instant that. Yesterday, I think someone climbed into my computer and just started fiddling around because it was running so slow. And I said to myself, what's going on in the background? Never known it so slow. I did actually find the problem. But actually, in this kind of picture, we have to have patience. We have to sow and we have to wait. And sometimes, because we don't see instant answers, is a challenge to give up. And I think no more in the era of prayer do we allow you to give up. No more than in the era of prayer. Because we've become so used to doing something, getting it back. It doesn't work like that for the farmer. And the Apostle Paul knew that he had to have people that were prepared to continue to work, continue to be faithful, even though they didn't see anything. You know, when you have little children, and if you haven't, I'm sorry to use the illustration, but it's always the mustard and cress, it seems, in my day. Maybe it's different today, but in my day, the children, they put these seeds on and from a damp cloth, and then, but it was always the same, wasn't it? Next day, these had to be able to be cut and put in a salad. You know? But it isn't like that, is it? And we have to help our children to realise that it takes time. And we have to do the same. We have to trust God that he is working his purposes out through what we are doing. The best example I can think of that is coming back to China. I mentioned about Eric Liddell, but probably the most well-known missionary is Hudson Taylor. If I was to tell you that Hudson Taylor believed he'd failed, because he didn't see the number of converts that he expected to see in China. From heaven's window, what would he say today? It would be a wow, wouldn't it? Of the number of Christians that are now in China and growing. last thing that Paul says is, if you are a faithful labourer, if you weed out the things that would interfere with the growing of the seed, if you work well on dealing with those things that are getting in the way, that enables God's work to be fruitful, you will get a reward. We mentioned the rewards in the athletic scene, and he says here, and the labourer in the harvest field is worthy of the first share. So many times we're encouraged to be the last in the queue. But in this, it's like he's saying, but actually your faithfulness in this means that you will receive a reward. You will get that opportunity to have that. And that's a great encouragement for people. So we conclude this morning by realising that we have someone who cares about us, who values us, but someone who encourages us to remain focused, to not lose heart and to not give up, to think about what we're being called for, and in doing that, to come to please our Heavenly Father. If you put up "don't quit," you can actually scribble out the middle letters and it says "do it." Do it. The Lord will say to us, "Are you going to do it? And please, you can have a minute or so."